Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The Stanley Cup will be in the building tonight in Sunrise, but unlike the previous three games, it will be handed out to the NHL's newest champion tonight. College baseball's title tilt is also coming up this evening as we close out a best of three in the College World Series. Welcome in to the Lombardi Line on what is a jam-packed Championship Monday. The show, as always, presented by DraftKings. Stormy Bonantoni here, live from downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino, alongside Will Hill, who's in for Michael today. And the real question is, I'm here in Vegas, but where in the world are you right now, Will? What is going on this morning?
It's a great question, Stormy. This should be a fun 2 hours. I had some trees come down near the house, so I am currently blocked off from getting to my own home, trying to get my way home. The cops directing me here and there, roads I've never heard of, so it's a challenge, but it's always an adventure.
I'm so impressed with the dedication that you were still able to hop on the line to join us on the show. Obviously, Will was supposed to be in his home office on Skype, and ideally, we'll get home at some point during the course of the show to do so. But poor guy just tries to go to the grocery store this morning and can't get home. I didn't realize you were basically like the Travelers Championship with trees falling out there. I'm so sorry, Will.
It's all good. I think I broke through and I'm like 2 minutes away from home. So this is a small victory here. So everything after this is going to be great. This is seriously like a Curb Your Enthusiasm, episode where they're pointing me here and there and just blocked off from going to my own home. So yeah, quite the start to the day here.
Unbelievable. Well, you're a saint. We appreciate you. Going to be a great show throughout the course of the next 2 hours. We have a lot to hit on at the end of hour one. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski is going to join us, talk all things Game 7 with the Stanley Cup Final wrapping up later on tonight. In hour two, hit on a little more of the Cup Final with VSiN's own Jared Smith. I'm sure we'll also get some Nerfy and Yerfy action with him like we always do, but appreciate our two guests that are going to join us later on in the show. And let's start with Game 7 coming up tonight. The margin for error is gone. It is cup or bust in Sunrise, Florida. 8:20 Eastern, puck drop on ABC coming up tonight. And the Oilers here on the brink of history as potentially the first team to come all the way back from down 3-0 to win a Stanley Cup since 1942 in the Toronto Maple Leafs. They currently sit -108, Florida -112, although here at Circa, where I'm broadcasting from, the Oilers have become the favorite here, but virtual pick'em game, total 5.5. What are some of your initial thoughts on this series, as it feels like, I don't know if you're a believer in momentum, but that all of it appears to be with the Oilers right now?
Yeah, it's interesting because, one of the squarest mindsets you can have is just react to the last thing you saw. That's why NFL, for one sport, is just hard to bet people lose because it's week to week and they react to the last thing we saw. And I'm careful of that when I'm thinking about this series. That being said, it's hard not to like Edmonton. They've just been so dominant these last three games. And the question I have, and we'll have some great guests here, and the question I have for you, what change after game three? Is it a fundamental change? Is it, you know, strategy? Is it injury? Or is it just the old Jeff Van Gundy adjustment of the biggest adjustment you can make is to just play better? I'm curious what you think about that, because it's hard to handicap this game without, you know, addressing, hey, what has changed here in this series?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially like it seemed like games two and three specifically for Florida that they were really, really playing to their strengths. And then in game four, I thought at the time it was more of a bump in the road type loss, similar to what we saw in the NBA Finals, where the Boston Celtics, you know, dropped a bad game four, come back at home and close out the series strong. That was very much so what I anticipated happening for Florida at the time. But Edmonton just seemed to build on it. And you have Connor McDavid, who goes into God mode, back to back games, first player in Stanley Cup final history to have back to back 4-point games, and really put the team on his back to catapult them to be in the position that they are now. And there are numerous points in this series, Will, where it feels like it was the turning point. Like, was it game four where it's the big 8-1 win? Was it even as recent as in game six, where you have the Florida Panthers with a shot to quiet the building a little bit after the Oilers go up 2-0, and the goal to make it 2-1 is taken off of the board with an offside penalty. That felt like it was another one of those big pivot points in the set. I have a lot of questions about tonight. I am somebody that has a Florida Panthers series ticket in pocket. I'm going to be sweating that out tonight. I decided that I am not going to hedge, although everything in my brain and my heart seems to tell me that Edmonton's going to win this thing. I'm trying to stick with my initial handicap of this series that the Florida Panthers are the better team top to bottom. They have more depth. They are the best defensive team in the NHL this season. They just need to get back to their game. And I'm very curious if they're capable of doing that. They do have the opportunity at home with last change in their pocket. But I'm not sure. From a betting standpoint, though, Will, do you think there could be a correlated play here where if you like the Panthers, then it's going to be more of an under game? If you think that the Oilers are going to win, then it's probably going to be more of an over game like we've seen the last four?
I'm not hockey savvy enough to know that. I did just bet the under. It's moved now where, I mean, you're laying a pretty penny now. Minus 145, minus 150. I don't know if they want to go to five. Maybe they will go to five. That was at least the last I looked where it was 5.5 juice to the under. Game seven's just trend to the under. It makes sense, really, in all these sports, NBA, you know, college basketball, national title game. Teams come out more conservative. They don't want to lose it early. It's like in the Super Bowl. You know, we always see low-scoring starts because – hey, it's a big game. There's some nerves. Refs maybe swallow the whistle where you're not going to get an early power play. So maybe an under, maybe a first period under. Maybe if you get a quick goal, then you can jump back in on an under with with the better numbers. I know a lot of people don't want to sit here and lay minus 150. So to me, I don't know if you'd be better at answering this. Hey, if Florida wins, it's an over. If Edmonton wins, it's an under. I'm not sure. But to me, game seven is just naturally to go under, even though you're missing the best of the number. I will say, if you like the over, probably wait until the very last second when this game starts, because I would think the under money would continue to come in. So I don't know. The other thing too, and I'm curious what you think, is this just a foregone conclusion with McDavid for the Conn Smythe? It's minus 3,000 now. If Florida wins this game 4-0, 5-1, McDavid's still going to get this award? I'm guessing so, just based on the market here.
I think so. And that market is a little bit hilarious to me, considering the movement that Connor McDavid had from around minus 275 prior to game six to now minus 3,000 plus, despite not even logging a single shot on goal in game six. But it speaks to the history, right, of what he's accomplishing in the series. I do think win or lose, he's going to be the guy there. To go back to what you were talking about with the total, the under actually is now even up to minus 155. Back-to-back unders to open this series. We've seen four straight overs since, but this will be the 18th game seven in Stanley Cup final history. 14 straight game sevens in the Cup final have stayed under 5.5 goals. All but one historically have stayed under that number. The only over was the Detroit Red Wings in 1950. And that goes back to what you're talking about in these types of games. Maybe you're a little bit nervous, especially early, holding the sticks a little bit tight, a tighter checking type defensive effort. My lone bet to your other point there is the first period under tonight. It's cashed in all but one game, and the one was that wild 8-1 game four with Edmonton. Slower starting, again, nerves. I think all of that's going to play into this. I do want to make sure that we hear from some of the players and coaches that are involved in this matchup tonight. Bench boss for the Florida Panthers, Paul Maurice, certainly knows what's ahead of his team tonight, but said these are the moments and opportunities that these players have dreamed of.
Game seven Stanley Cup final, it is set for every young man's dreams. Nobody ever dreamt about a game four overtime winner. It's always game seven. I'm not concerned about the past at all, George. We'll do, our plan is set. Started last night after the game. Met this morning, did video. Do the same tomorrow, get ready to play. I know it's 3-3. So the concern of the previous three games certainly didn't affect Edmonton, and it won't affect us.
Well, they also didn't allow as many goals, though, the Oilers, I mean, in those early games as the Florida Panthers have the back half of this. Sergei Bobrovsky, Will, stopped 78 of 80 shots that came his way the first eight periods of this series. But since the start of the third period in game three, he's allowed 14 goals on 64 shots. That's priority one for me if I'm Florida, is has this Edmonton Oilers team got so far into Bob's head that they can't get out of it? I just don't know the answer.
And the other thing I'm curious, and I'm really curious what you think, is Florida tired? Because I've heard of people, a lot of people just say, hey, Florida looks gassed. They look like they're running on fumes. Is that something you buy, or is that narrative based?
I think that you're going to be able to get up for the Stanley Cup final no matter how tired you are. But it's true from the standpoint of the postseason in the NHL is an absolute grind. And the fact that they went all the way to this point a season ago and ultimately ended up losing to the Vegas Golden Knights, that they worked their way back into that position this season, it is very, very taxing. And hockey, I mean, we talk about in the NFL, of course, like how taxing that sport is, the physicality on your body. With hockey, it's a very, very similar type thing. And the grind of the postseason is so much longer. While we're on goaltending, though, I do want to hear from Stuart Skinner as well, the Edmonton Oilers goaltender, who has been masterful the back half of series this postseason. Take a listen.
I think, honestly, we've had a lot of practice, you know, having to push back. I think it was very much earned. We had to do absolutely everything in our power to get to this point where we are, and I'm sure Florida would say the exact same thing. It takes every single guy. It's literally taken every guy in our room to get into a position like this, and it's very exciting and it's very enjoyable to be able to be here.
No offense, but hockey players are like very, very boring in media availability. But Stuart Skinner, got to give credit where credit is due. He has been great the back half of these series, games 4-7 in the postseason, 10-0, 9.43 save percentage, 1.40 goals against average. He's 5-0 when facing elimination. And well, you'll love this. When they were down 3-0, he said, "I don't know the stats, but if anyone can come back, it's the Oil." So he's certainly confident.
Yeah, look, I'm excited. We don't get too many of these in the winter sports. The NBA hasn't played a Game 7 NBA final since 2016. This is only the third NHL Stanley Cup Game 7 final since 2011. So this is a treat. I'm excited. I will be watching every minute. And it's after how boring the NBA playoffs were, it's good we get some juice here in the NHL.
No doubt about it. Okay, hopefully the next time we talk to you after this commercial break, you're sitting in a chair and connected to your computer. We shall see. But we are just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. When we return, it's also a winner take all in college baseball tonight. Will the Tennessee Volunteers finish the job as the first number one overall seed to win the College World Series since 1999? Plus, Scottie Scheffler does it again. And what happened in the W last night? Could Angel Reese be poised to upset Caitlin Clark for Rookie of the Year? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content up at VSiN.com. We've got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, trends, and of course, betting news. Today on the homepage, our resident NHL expert Johnny Lazarus has a breakdown of everything you need to know for tonight's Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final from a side and prop perspective. Plus, even as we enter the dog days of summer, you can find daily betting previews for games in Major League Baseball, the WNBA, and more. If you haven't hit up VSiN.com yet, you're missing out. It's your one-stop shop for all things sports betting. Alongside Will Hill in for Michael today, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. And on yesterday's show, when Michael and Femi Abebefe were on the program, they put a poll out to the Twitterverse trying to find out if there is an underdog in the QB to start week one market in the NFL that was realistic. The results will have been tabulated, and apparently none of them was the number one choice with 31.1% of the vote, followed by J.J. McCarthy at plus 220. He had 25% of the vote here. Drake May at plus 200, 24.8% of the vote, and Aiden O'Connell last there at plus 150, despite him being the shortest underdog price to start for the Las Vegas Raiders. What do you make of the poll? Agree or disagree with the results here?
I love Lombardi being interactive too. He's just such a man of the people. It's great.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I think it's, I would go with May if I had to pick one of them, just because if you believe the reports, if you believe the rumors, the Patriots turned down a hell of a lot for May. I guess Minnesota offered this year's one. Remember, Minnesota had two ones this year. So Minnesota offered both their ones for this year, a one next year, then some other stuff, and the Pats said no. So if you think that highly of the player, I mean, he's probably going to play sooner rather than later. I know it has to be week one, but I don't know. What's the purpose of playing Brissett? We know what Brissett is. Brissett's a guy who, it depends what's around him. If you put him on a talented team, okay, he can get you like 9 wins or something, but this is not a talented team. So don't you want to just throw May into the fire, get him some reps? I know the counter to that is, hey, it's a bad offensive line. you're almost saving him from getting, you know, whatever, saving him from himself, saving him from the situation. But if I had to guess, just based on what they passed, I would say New England playing May is not that outlandish, where he just gets to camp and he wows people. The arm, the, you know, the mobility. Remember, people have compared this guy some mix of Herbert and Allen, which, you know, maybe he's far-fetched. But if he shows glimpses of that, maybe the Patriots say, you know what, are we doing? We don't care if we win any games this year. Anyway, we'll just take our pick. If he has some growing pains, let's get him out of the way now. Let's play May. What are your thoughts?
See, meanwhile, you're funny because I am kind of on the opposite side of that. As you see the odds on your screen, Jacoby Brissett, minus 260 favorite to be the week one starter. May there at plus 200. But for me, I feel like I'm saying it every day on this show that there are more quarterbacks in the NFL that are ruined than they are developed, especially young. And Drake May is somebody who's being, in my opinion, or should be given the opportunity to sit back and learn and start to clean up a lot of the issues that he has with his footwork, with his inconsistencies in the passing game. And sitting behind Jacoby Brissett and not worrying about getting wrecked, to your point, with the offensive line and being in a situation where you're losing a ton of confidence, losing games week in and week out, I feel like it's a good opportunity to develop him and let him watch and learn waiting in the wings. Looking at some of the commentary from the poll on X, though, Mike D wrote, May will only start if the Patriots want to win. Otherwise, if it's a rebuild, they're losers again in the bottom of the AFC East. Conflicting opinions, though. B. Dov says, all of them, none of these should be underdogs besides May. And I still think he starts week one. So, you know, a lot of interesting commentary here. The one I wanted to ask you about on this list was Garner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. So Minshew, a $2 favorite to start for the Raiders this year after he gets brought in on a two-year $25 million deal, 15 guaranteed. JT the Brick was on Follow the Money this morning, and he said he thinks O'Connell will be the week one guy. He'll get the ball to start camp in the preseason, and that there's a loyalty perspective with Antonio Pierce, who believes that Aiden O'Connell has done enough to earn the opportunity. Where do you sit on that?
Hadn't thought of it that way. That's probably a good angle, and I know JT's probably close to that situation, so I take that with you know, with not a grain of salt, what's the opposite of a grain of salt? I take, you know, I respect his opinion when it comes to that, just because I do think, you know, he's close to the situation. And I hadn't thought of that where, hey, O'Connell won this guy games. O'Connell helped Pierce get the job. Now, look, some of that's on Christmas where they returned two fumbles for touchdowns, but still, it's his guy. And maybe there is just a little bit of a tiebreaker that goes to O'Connell just because he's been there before. I do think O'Connell, just because he's younger, maybe has a slightly more upside. But if you're trying to, like, what's your goal for the Raiders? Probably best case scenario, you make a wild card, you make the playoffs. That would be a big deal. That helps everyone keep their job. That's a successful year. Minshew's probably the best guy if you want to somehow get the 9-8. I would think Minshew's just a little bit better than O'Connell, so I get why he's the favorite. But if I had to bet, I'd probably just take the plus money here. And based on what JT said, I think that's another reason about it.
I know a lot's made of that Kansas City game where he didn't complete a pass after the first quarter. But Aiden O'Connell, Matt Eumanns came on and he did a blind resume between Trevor Lawrence and Aiden O'Connell the back end of last season. And Aiden O'Connell, if you took away the name, you wouldn't realize eight touchdowns and no picks for him the last four games of the year. I just think similarly of this situation as I do the Minnesota Vikings, in that you signed somebody and you're paying them, like I said, two-year $25 million contract. Sam Darnold gets brought in on one-year $10 million contract. Considering what we usually pay backup quarterbacks, it feels like you bring this guy in to be that bridge for whoever your quarterback of the future ultimately will be. And with Minnesota, Darnold is a $3 favorite to start there. J.J. McCarthy plus 220.
I think the betting angle there, I mean, there are some books that have an over-under for McCarthy's passing yards for the season. If that number's correct, Mark McCarthy's around 3,000 for the season. Don't you just play the under and figure, hey, if Darnold's going to start week one at earliest, you're not going to bench Darnold until, I don't know, week four or five. That 3,000 is very high. I think the bet there is the under, because I agree, Darnold's the rightful favorite. Sounds like, what are the quotes been there? Hey, there's untapped potential with Darnold. They think they can get something out of him. It's a good situation with Addison and with Jefferson, and McCarthy's not ready, which, look, if you're trading up, I know they only traded up one spot, but if you're trading up to get McCarthy and, you know, you're picking him with the 10th pick of the draft, I mean, he's thrown out first pitches in the dirt. He's looked bad in camp. I know it's June, and sometimes these training camp stories can be a little misleading. This is not a good start. This is not what you want if you're the Vikings. You don't feel comfortable if you're a Viking fan that, hey, we got our guy for the next 10 years. We got our franchise quarterback. It really feels like you reach for McCarthy here.
I think that's a really good perspective, though, and a way to approach a different prop market. Another comment that we got on the poll was from at Burgie the Hippie said, and watch out for Mr. Locke in New Jersey for the G-men. If Jones can't push the ball downfield and is making too many bad decisions, again, Locke will be the starter week one for the Giants. Dable's trying to save his job. Same with the GM. Daniel Jones currently a minus 425 favorite to be the week one starter in New York. But Drew Locke there, who was brought in this past offseason, and we saw those reports from Seattle, right, that he was thought to have an opportunity to earn that job plus 275.
I think Jones makes too much money. I think Jones, if he's healthy, will probably get first crack at this. Now you say, hey, he tore his ACL, what, middle of the season? So maybe he's not ready. But if he's ready, I would think Jones is going to play. I've heard this a lot about Dable's got to save his job, hot seat. I'm pretty critical, I think, in coaches. I don't see how Dable could be on the hot seat. I think Dable's done a hell of a job. That first year, they somehow made the playoffs and won a playoff game with very little talent. And then even last year, he's playing Tommy Cutlet. They looked just awful, and they ended up with, what, 5 wins, 6 wins? Like, he got absolute. I mean, that is making chicken salad. He really had no talent the past couple years. If he got fired, it would not take very long for him to get another head coaching job. I think he's a really good coach. Now, if you read between the lines, sounds like he can be a little bit difficult to get along with. Wink Martindale, you know, there were reports those two weren't speaking. He can be hard on the players, hard on the coaches. So maybe that, we've seen that before with coaches. Hey, he's a good coach, but he's hard to get along with. They end up exiting sooner than their talent should indicate. But boy, I think you're crazy if you're the Giants, if you're letting Dable go. Dable's the best thing you got going for this franchise. Dable, I think, is a good coach.
And to your point, yeah, Coach of the Year, his inaugural season with the franchise. Yeah, give a guy a little bit of time, right? Like, it takes time to build these things up. And no matter what quarterback is starting, they're going to be in a bad position if you continue to have the quarterback killers as your offensive line up front. It's been a brutal situation in New York for years, not just last season, right, which was particularly bad, regardless of what quarterback was under center. Any of these other QB situations interest you? You got Bo Nix, a $4 favorite in Denver, with Zach Wilson and Jarrett Stidham behind him. Russell Wilson, massive favorite to be the week one starter for the Steelers. Apparently, he's got a big lead in that quarterback battle with Justin Fields and Geno Smith, and bringing Sam Howell in for the Seahawks.
I would actually lay the minus 400 with Bo Nix and just bet against injury. If he's healthy, he's going to be starting. So that would be one, but I know a lot of people don't want to tie up their money or lay minus 400. So that's a cop out, but that's actually one where, I mean, you're really just betting against an injury. I don't see any scenario where Stidham starts week one. That would be a disaster. Let me ask you, any of these you'd actually bet? It's a fun segment. It's a fun thought exercise. Anything that where you, hey, I'm going to actually go after the show and bet this market.
I think that the, if they're a quote unquote lock, right, to your point, I think it would have to be Bo Nix, and you don't want to lay $4. I'm not trying to make this bet in June. But it feels like that's the only one that is really, really on solid footing here and is a decent enough price that you would be willing to pay it. Based on JT the Brick's comments, though, Aiden O'Connell at a plus money price, if that's realistic and Antonio Pierce truly does feel like Aiden O'Connell deserves an opportunity that's similar to what we talk about Russell Wilson in pole position, that's realistic. I don't hate a small pizza money shot at a plus 150. We're going to hit the break. We're coming back to the NHL when we return. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski is going to give us his thoughts on Game 7 tonight in the Stanley Cup Final.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With NFL training camp starting in less than a month, the VSiN experts have been hard at work to get you ready for the upcoming NFL season. Our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide drops this week and is packed with everything you need to dominate this NFL season. We've got in-depth profiles of each and every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends you won't find anywhere else. But that's not all. Our experts have weighed in with their best bets on season win totals, futures, props, and more. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or you're just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. And to celebrate the release of the guide, VSiN's going all out with a special coverage throughout the day. Tune in this Thursday for expert analysis, insider tips, and all the NFL insight you need to start the season strong. Remember, the only way, though, to get our all-new NFL betting guide is by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Will Hill and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Game 7 coming up tonight in the NHL Stanley Cup Final. Will the Florida Panthers win their first cup in franchise history, or will the Edmonton Oilers make a little history of their own as the first team since 1942 to claw their way back from down 3-0 to raise that cup over their heads? To help us out getting into all things Game 7, ESPN's Greg Wyshynski joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. He's in Sunrise, Florida for Game 7 tonight. NHL writer, co-host of The Drop, fighting the good fight with the travel as well, Greg, because we talk so much about the players and how taxing it is on their bodies to go all the way through to this point in the season. How about you? How are you holding up with this cross-countries travel?
Not nearly as good as the players. I mean, we're all taking multiple flights. There's no direct flights from Fort Lauderdale to Edmonton. You know, they're on a plane. It's a charter. They're flying direct. They've got masseuses on the plane, probably. You know, we're living a different life than these guys. But, you know, the bottom line is that for being a series between the two cities that are farthest away from each other in Stanley Cup final history, it's actually gone pretty smoothly, I think, for everybody involved. And the extra days built in that we were all kind of complaining about ended up being pretty mandatory, especially as the series has gone on.
Greg, when you're looking at Game 7, I think the first question you have to ask is, what changed after Game 3? Did something change after Game 3, whether it's strategy, just something fundamental where these teams are playing different, or is it just a case of, hey, Edmonton's played better Games 4 through 6?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. What changed is that it went to Game 4, and that's usually when the Oilers start really playing. In every round of this postseason, they have picked up their business after Game 3. To the tune of only losing once after Game 3 in the postseason. Stuart Skinner, their goalie, I believe, is 10-0 after Game 3. So they kind of ease into a series, kind of get their feet wet, understand what they need to do defensively, and then act accordingly. And then their goaltender just plays lights out in the latter parts of series. So, you know, it's funny when we think back to when the Panthers were up 3-0 and the Oilers were saying things like, we like the way we're playing. We kind of like our game. Their coach, Chris Knobloch, was talking about his plans for the next 10 days of the series when they're 1-1 away from going home. We're all having a laugh. We're all having a chuckle. They were right. We should have listened to them. they were completely right. And they finally got to their game, and here we are in Game 7.
I was one of them. A tweet that has aged very poorly when Chris Knobloch said, down 3-0, we have shown that we can beat this team. And I was like, where? In what way? And then they go out and reel off 3 straight wins the way they have. How much nervous energy do you anticipate from Florida fans in that building tonight? Especially given that you at one point thought that these players were sizing up rings. You know, you were ready to have that first cup in franchise history.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of nervous energy, and that's why, as cliche as it sounds, the first goal tonight could decide who wins the cup. I mean, you have a Florida team that really needs to kind of get that boost of confidence to feel better about themselves after the way that things have gone in the previous 3 games. I think if they give up the first goal, there could be a sense of, oh no, here we go again, and all of a sudden the crowd, or at least the ones wearing Panthers jerseys, because I do expect there's going to be more than a few Edmonton fans in the building tonight, are going to be pretty tense. And then, you know, if they score the first goal, then I think they're going to feel, like I said, that maybe things have shifted. Maybe things have changed. They can get to their game better. You know, the last time that they were here in Sunrise, yeah, Connor McDavid had 4 points. The Oilers won the game. They made it a series again. But their coach, Paul Maurice of the Panthers, said, we really liked the game we played. We thought it was probably our best game of the series, despite being a loss. So they have some things to build on here, but ultimately it comes down to who scores first and how that emotion feels inside the building.
Well, we don't know who's going to win the game, but we seem to know who's going to win the Conn Smythe. McDavid minus 3,000 now. Let me ask it this way. If Florida wins 4-0, 5-1, can somebody other than McDavid steal this award?
Yeah, if Sasha Barkov has all 5 goals, there's still a chance that maybe he can win the Conn Smythe. Barkov's the only guy right now for me that you can point to and say, There is just a glimmer of possibility that he could win the MVP. You know, if he shuts down McDavid, if he scores, say, like a hat trick, or, you know, scores the game-winning goal in a double overtime or something, like, there's a tiny, tiny chance that he could overcome McDavid and win the MVP. I don't think it's going to happen. The only reason it would happen is if you had enough of the 18 or so voters that simply don't want to give MVP to somebody in a losing effort. But the problem is that what Connor did in games 4 and 5, back-to-back 4-point games, no one else in NHL history has done that. He broke Gretzky's record for the most assists in a postseason by an individual. Like, he's rewritten the record book along with willing his team back into the series. And I think now that it's at game seven, it's going to be really hard for a lot of these voters to not give him at the MVP based on the fact that he's just, you know, been so important for the Oilers, even in a losing effort.
And I know you are somebody who looks at these odds. How telling is it from a historical perspective that he goes from around minus 275 to this minus 3000 number following a game with which he didn't even log a shot on goal or a point?
Well, that's just what I'm talking about. Like, the betting market's smart because they know inherently that if there's a counter argument to McDavid not winning the MVP in a losing effort, it would be that maybe they didn't get to a game seven. You know, that was something that some of the writers I spoke to that do have votes, I don't have one, I should say, that do have votes have said, which is that if he gets this thing to seven, then we could probably talk about him, you know, winning in a losing effort. And so once that happens, now you're thinking, okay, there's an inevitability. For those who don't know, there's only been one non-goaltender to win MVP of the playoffs in a losing effort, Reggie Leach back in 1976. The other four times that this has happened, it's been goalies that have won it. You can understand why. You know, they drag a bad team to a cup final or something like that. In Connor's case, I just think there's too much history being made and there's too much anticipation of wanting to give this guy his flowers, win or lose, that it's hard for me to envision him not winning it tonight.
All right, Greg, no more softball questions for me. Who wins and what's the final score?
we have a round table on ESPN.com. My prediction is there. I will tell you it is 5-2 Oilers. I think we could see a situation where it's 3-2, maybe a couple empty netters boost the score to that kind of total. I should say game seven are usually tightly played. I think that the scores are kept pretty low traditionally in these kinds of games. And the fact that the referees will probably not be whistling a lot of penalties and probably in the back of their minds know that if they do, it's a distinct advantage for the Oilers in the series, might also hurt the Edmonton goal total. But I just have a feeling that this could be one of those games where Edmonton jumps out of the gate fast, the Panthers are scratching and clawing and get back into it, and then at the end of the day, it's a pretty big spread for the Oilers, and they raise the cup.
It was interesting looking at that article that you have up at ESPN.com this morning where the majority of you were on Edmonton and it looked like those totals were going to go over the 5.5 that we see posted here in the betting market. Last thing that I had for you was just because you mentioned the special teams effort there and how masterful Edmonton has been on the penalty kill. How sad is it for Florida that they get a power play, they get a man advantage, and it's like, actually, this is going to be a momentum builder for them.
Yeah, it stinks, and it's hard to watch. Like, you on one side of the ice, you have basically poetry in what Edmonton does on their power play, and on the other side of the ice, you have like a dirty limerick. Like, it's a terrible power play to watch. I hate watching it. I wish they wouldn't give the Panthers power plays because it's so frustrating to watch really good hockey players not really know what to do with the advantage they're given. So, like I said, referees are human as of right now. Maybe they get replaced with robots at some point, but they're human right now. And I think you have to remember that their prime directive is to not influence the outcome of the game. And because they're human, they know that if they give the Oilers four power play opportunities, they're probably scoring a goal in game seven. And so I think you cannot discount that notion of the fact that, you know, penalties that would normally be called earlier in the series may not be called in game seven because of how much that could tip things in Edmonton's favor.
Greg, you're awesome. Enjoy the action tonight. And thanks so much for all of the hard work that you've had covering the series.
No worries. Loved doing the show and appreciate it.
Greg Wyshynski, you can follow him on X at Wyshynski. And of course, check out The Drop as well. He and Arda Ocal have done an awesome job with immediate reaction breakdowns of each and every game of the Cup Finals. Speaking of that penalty kill, by the way, for Edmonton, historic 94.1% kill. They have not allowed a goal on 64 of 68 power plays, two shorties in this series so far. We'll be right back here resetting with hour two on the Lombardi Line. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the week, ladies and gentlemen. Our NFL betting guide is officially dropping on Thursday. There's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide is your secret weapon for the upcoming season, with in-depth profiles of each and every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and betting trends. You'll have all the tools you need to bet this season. Plus, our experts share their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving the insights you need ahead of the action. To get the guide, though, you must be a VSiN Pro subscriber, and for a limited time, you can get our annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price, usually $240. You can subscribe now for just $199 with promo code Lombardi. Plus, we're throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and our special edition betting angles to keep you betting smarter all year long. Don't miss out. Our new NFL betting guide is available at vsin.com/subscribe, but you got to use that promo code Lombardi. Alongside Will Hill, in for Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome in to the program Jared Smith on the Progressive guest line, jack of all trades, host and betting analyst here at VSiN. You can catch him on Live on the Line on Stadium, as well as all football season every weekend, Fox Sports Radio. Jared, we appreciate you coming in with us today. Will a Panthers loss in the Stanley Cup final be the biggest choke job in modern professional sports? Help us break it down.
Oh, wow. It is great to be with you guys today. Yeah, I think when you lose a 3-0 lead, I think if there's one sport where I wouldn't call it a choke job, I think it would be hockey, just because of how difficult it is in those elimination games, as you know, Stormy. And you give Edmonton a lot of credit. I think really, and we were watching game five together, I think that first period of game five was probably the best indicator of the Oilers' comeback. Like, you thought Florida had a chance to really slam the door, just like Vegas did last year at home in game five. They give up the shorty in the first like 5 minutes of the period. And then it was just, from there, it was just the momentum kind of took over. But I don't know. I think the number might be telling me Florida's got to be a play for us tonight.
Jared, I like Edmonton. I have a feeling they're going to win, but just listening to everyone, talking to everyone, I guess not everybody is on Edmonton. Do you worry this is a little too square? There's some recency bias. Who do you like in the game, and do you have a feel here for the total?
Yeah, I think the recency bias is absolutely going to take us to Edmonton. And listen, momentum's a hell of a drug in the postseason. I'm not denying the fact that eliminating a 3-0 deficit and to be on the cusp of what would be one of the most unbelievable comebacks in the history of sports, it has to fuel them in a way that Florida's probably fearful. I'm trying to picture myself on the plane back from Edmonton for the Panthers. Like, I think the Oilers plane could have like floated back from, back to Sunrise, but that must have been a really difficult and very long plane ride back from Edmonton after game six. But then, Will, you look at the number and I'm like, okay, Florida was a -130, -140 favorite in games one and two. It was kind of the same number in game five. And now I'm seeing some shops flip the minus sign to Edmonton in this game. So I don't know how much the momentum is worth. I think that is the difficult thing to handicap in this game. Obviously, the Oilers have momentum, but is it really a 20 or 30 cent move from what we saw just a few days ago in game five? I don't think I'm there. So while I think the momentum certainly favors the Oilers, I think the number tonight favors the Panthers in terms of getting a discount. The total, listen, the unders have been unbelievable in game seven historically. But now you have to do the flat five. You're not getting that 5.5. So, they're making you pay for it. But I would still lean to the under tonight.
And speaking to what you're saying there about the price difference and the way that things have changed, your boy Todd Furman tweeted tonight will be the first time since October 19th that the Panthers could close as a home dog, a 60-plus cent adjustment from where Florida closed at home in game five. So it's really, really crazy to see the way that this thing has moved. And, Greg Wyshynski, we had him on the program a little bit ago. He made an interesting point that I am completely on board with, that it feels like whoever scores first tonight could be in a position to go on and win the game tonight, just like you were saying with what we felt in this game five, when you see Edmonton score that shorthanded goal early. Does it feel like goal one tonight is the goal that'll finish it?
Absolutely. And I know it's not the end all be all in hockey, right? Two goalies, the worst lead in hockey, all that stuff. But I think
it's almost impossible for me to look at this game from like an analytical perspective. Like game seven to me is like this own entity. And yes, the team that scores first, that gets that monkey off of their back and can relax a little bit, I think will play better later on. The question is, when will the first goal happen? I'm not so sure it'll be in the first period. I could see this being a scoreless first period. But I agree with that sentiment completely. If there's some kind of correlated parlay you can cook up, team that scores first wins, obviously it's very correlated. But I do think that is an absolute smart way to look at it tonight.
Jared, is McDavid going to win the Conn Smythe no matter what? Or can you make a case if somebody hits a game winner? Then okay, there you
okay.
go.
Yes.
I can't even. Well, like, Will, I mean, you analyze these futures markets a lot. Like, does the market get something this wrong this late in the game? Like, minus 3,000 is big. I mean, that is a massive price. I can't see the market getting something that wrong and letting it sit up for 3 days and let people bet into a, you know, 40-1, 50-1, whatever the long shots are priced at. I can't see the market getting it this wrong.
Tell me your thoughts on the goaltending tonight. We know Stuart Skinner has gotten better as each of these postseason series have gone on. And Bobrovsky, it feels like since that game four explosion of the Edmonton offense, has just been off of his game. Can he dial it back in at home? And like what you said, a game seven that feels like a different animal.
I think he can. I think the most interesting part of this series, and I don't have the historical context because I don't have the schedules of all the prior Stanley Cups in front of me, but I feel like 2 days off between every single home road game, giving them the extra day, it is a lot. It almost resets the series in a sense. And I know Edmonton's won three straight. You know, we've had game four. We had game four in Edmonton, then game five back in Florida, game six in Edmonton. So it's like crisscrossing the country for the last 2 weeks, these teams. It feels like that travel and that change of venue does kind of reset things a little bit. So I wouldn't base everything off of my handicap tonight off what we saw in game six, because I do think this is a different vibe tonight. I would not be surprised. Edmonton's been free and easy. They've used that, right? We use that phrase, house money. They've been skating with house money the last 3 years. You're down 3-0 in a series. What else could possibly go wrong? They started to play looser. They started to win some games. Well, now you're one win away from the Stanley Cup. There's nothing more loose or free about anything that's going to take place tonight. I'm curious who handles that tension and that anxiety better early in the game. I kind of think the Panthers are a little bit better suited to handle it, but they haven't handled it well the last few days. So we'll see if things change tonight in game seven.
Jared, you are the prime minister of the Yerfy Nerfy. Mm. What's like an overview of how it's gone this year? I sense it's been a lot of Nerfies. I've seen some like 15-1 Nerfy days. And what are a few you're looking at for tonight?
It's been crazy. Actually, the best, I've never given myself a nickname in this space until Dustin Sweetelson, our trusty producer and host of Sharp Money, dubbed me the father of first innings, which is my favorite nickname I've ever been given. I don't think I'll ever be given a better nickname than that in my entire career, but it's a fun market. I think it's a stressful market because the ball could literally hit a pebble and go into center field and you lose your bet. You know, it's like it's a cruel market, one mistake, one error. But I do think it's been a very unique season for the Nerfy. I tracked a 60% month in May. That's absurd. I think we'll get a little bit more closer. It's been kind of 50%. Like the 3 years I've done this, it's been a lot of 51%, 50.5%. Like it's been very much coin flip. But for some reason this year, the Nerfy's been prominent. I think a couple things, it could be a little bit of variance, but I also think the velocity, the average velocity of these starting pitchers is really starting to rise. You're seeing a lot of young rookies make incredible starts. Skeens is the first one that comes to mind, but there's a bunch of them that have just come onto the scene and have just taken the league by storm. I think that benefits a Nerfy. Anytime you get a pitcher that's facing a hitter for the first time, that is always advantage pitcher. And then later in the game, the hitter makes the adjustment. So I think that's a reason why we've seen an increased number of Nerfies this year. And it's fun. It's a market that people love to bet, and I love to give out information for it because there's not a lot of information available.
Well, can you give us some information on today? We've only got about 40 seconds, but can we keep the good vibes rolling? What's the Nerfy play of the day?
We'll go Mariners-Rays. The Mariners have actually been hot in the first inning lately, but they'll face Taz Bradley tonight, who's fantastic. He throws smoke, 40% strikeout rate in the first inning. Brian Wu's been kind of up and down. He's been injured, but I do think he'll get back on track tonight and go a clean first inning down there in Tampa.
Jared Smith, you're the man. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We appreciate you.
Good luck. You're the rat. Let's do it tonight. Go Panthers.
Oh, please. I would love to see it. Will, we need to close this out, okay? I know that your heart tells you Edmonton today. Why are you going against me? We need Florida. We need a team play.
I didn't say my heart. I don't have a heart. I have a gut feel. It's a gut feel towards Edmonton.
So you have a stomach and a gut, but no heart?
Yes.
Oh, good stuff. Yeah, I like where Jared is coming from, that this is a different animal when you get to game seven. And the point that he made about how now Edmonton is going to feel the pressure a little bit, whereas they haven't had to the last couple games. It's like, okay, yeah, it's, don't get me wrong, your season is over if you aren't on top, but now you have the pressure of an actual cup in the building for you, not just Florida. I think it's interesting. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. Plenty more to come. Half hour to go.